is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
City Talking Technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And finally, the iPad 2 was released, so we can talk about the actual specs this week. We'll get to that.
And Steve Jobs came back just for
that. We're going to go through that, and we're also going to explain why Apple can sell the iPad 2 for $500, and if any other vendors sell it for $500, the equivalent version, they'll actually lose money.
Really?
Yeah, it's a very clever marketing scheme. So we're going to talk about the whole iPad, iPod ecosystem that Apple has created and why they can sell the hardware at such a low price. Department of Commerce is trying to figure out how the Internet governance will talk up. They've actually released a request for response relating to IANA, the Internet Assigned Number Authority. I'll just talk briefly about that because it's fun to watch how the government actually governs the Internet. It's not fully independent, but there is quite a bit of government involvement, particularly at the high-end, top-level domain management. We'll talk about that and how that works. We're also going to, in Profiles in IT, highlight a woman who started a business using technology where she calls it, you've heard of microfinance?
Mm-hmm.
This is micro-work. You create many tasks through outsourcing, and you make it available to very, very, very poor countries. She's actually transforming the world of outsourcing. Extremely clever. And I want to highlight this because it's showing one of the really good applications of the Internet. And we'll look at the Google Transparency Report to see how much traffic is going in and out of Libya.
Ooh.
Yeah, we'll track that and what exactly they're doing. And you might already guess what the answer could be.
I don't want to ruin it.
I know. So and then, of course, we will have one history moment of the show. We'll talk about the first Internet webcam.
Ooh.
But now it is time for...
There's a letter in your mailbox.
He's awake.
Oh, yes. Very good. Mr. Big Voice is right on the money. And he sounds like he's had his coffee and he's raring to go.
Well, that one always has had his coffee.
That's right.
I think.
We have an email from Ron. Dear Dr. Schertz, in case you missed the New York Times article a couple of weeks ago, you may appreciate...
But you don't miss anything.
Oh, I miss a few things, but... I do miss a few things. You may appreciate the Escoffier references on the second page, along with a very tasty slideshow. By the way, as much as I enjoy your information-packed weekly broadcast...
Are you sure you didn't write this email yourself?
No, I didn't. I wish you would correct the promo that begins with, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, the what? He says, as far as I know, there's no such entity that has existed by that name since 1913 when President Taft signed a bill establishing the cabinet-level U.S. Department of Labor on his last day of office. The actual identity of your source is probably the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Employment Data Unit of the USDL. Cheers, Ron Krieger. Okay, we're gonna have to turn this over to our crack research staff.
I think you're right.
To get this commercial redone. Actually, Ron, we don't even listen to the commercials. You know,
we're an island unto ourselves. Here,
no. During the breaks, we actually do break dancing in here. You see, that's the thing.
Exactly,
that's what's called a break.
That's right.
Break dancing, break, and
it
we
keeps
do,
our minds fresh.
We do break dancing, so we'll have to listen to that particular. Thing and get it fixed.
Mm-hmm.
We'll turn that over to the crack research department, headed by Beverly.
Crack would be the operative word.
That's right. We have an email from Howard. Dear Tech Talk, I was checking my router's configuration and noticed that I have dozens and dozens of port forwarding entries marked Teredo. And these keep changing. Do I have a virus or a spy bot that's going in there and reconfiguring my router? I'm worried. What should I do? Thanks, Howard. Well, Howard, you can relax. These entries are fine. In the computer networking world, Teredo is a transition technology that allows mutual access between IPv6 hosts. These are the latest version of the Internet protocol, IP version 6, and IPv4 hosts. And what's actually going on? It's setting up an IPv6 tunnel. That's the protocol. So what they're doing, they're taking an IP version 6 packet, they're encapsulating it in an IP version 4 header, so it looks like an IP 4 system, and that's the Teredo process. That encapsulated IPv6 packet then goes through your router and using in one of these Teredo ports, and then it goes to an IPv4 to IPv6 Teredo converter, and it basically that then server strips off the encapsulation and then launches the IPv6 packet directly to the IPv6 website that you want. So it allows for an IPv6 client in your local network to talk to an IPv6 server, even though your router, your network address translation device, as they call it, the NAT, is only working IPv4. So it's actually a transition technology. It's kind of a workaround until we're all completely converted to IPv6, and Teredo should be retired soon. By the way, Teredo was invented by a Microsoft network engineer.
Huh.
It's a great technology. It'll probably be outdated within the next couple of years, but don't worry. I checked after I got this email, I went and checked my router, and I probably had around 64 Teredo port forwarding entries on my router. So
interesting.
So no problem at all. Ah, we have an email from Seema. Seema's emailed us
before. I'm reading ahead. That's why
yes,
I'm laughing.
Dear Dr. Schertz, I use Skype, and I don't want my family to see my chat history. Oh my! Oh my! What kind of listeners do we have?
I don't know.
Well, she probably wants to keep them from knowing what their Christmas presents are.
Yeah, that's it. You have such a pure little mind.
How can I delete it? I love your show. You and Jim do a good job, Seema.
Just a good job?
That's kind of a downer. You do a good job. Okay.
You guys are okay for 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, but, you know, she's worried about this Skype. Okay, here's the deal, Seema. You've got no problem. You can delete all your Skype history. What you want to do, open up Skype, go to Tools, and then under there will be a drop-down menu. Select Options at the bottom of the menu, and then that'll open up another window, and you select the Privacy tab. Under the Privacy tab, you'll see a button called Clear History. You click that, and you'll clear all your chat, all your phone calls, and all your download history. It just clears everything. Now, there's also a drop-down memory there that will actually specify how long chat history is maintained. And you can actually not keep any chat. You can keep it for 2 weeks, for 1 week. And so if you really don't want chat showing up on Skype, then just on the drop-down menu, just say, I don't want any chat in the future, and you'll be set. And then none of your family will know what the Christmas presents are that you're planning to buy for them.
Or what masked man you've been talking to on the internet.
That could be. I don't think that way, Jim.
I have a conspiratorial mind, I'm sorry.
I know, indeed. We have an email from Angelica.
Uh-huh.
Dear Tech Talk, I would like to control what my children can see on the internet. What are my options? I'm using Windows Vista at home. Thanks, Angelica. Well, you have several options, actually, to control this, depending on how technically savvy you are.
Mm-hmm.
You could actually go into your home router or firewall, and you can go in that, and you can actually, and there's a, in the like in the case of my Fios router, there's actually a parental control section, and you can block specific sites. You can block specific kinds of traffic. You can even block access to the internet for a particular client. So if your children are using a particular computer, you could say this computer will not connect to the internet during homework time. You could actually put a time period from 7:30 to 9:30. You could actually block specific sites that you would want. Now, it doesn't do content filtering. It actually, you have to actually know the name of the site. Now, the nice thing is that they can't get around that because it's at the firewall. You have a password to the firewall. So no matter what they do to the browser or to their local Windows configuration, and kids are clever, they're not going to be able to beat that firewall configuration. Or the router configuration. Now, the second option, you can do filtering within the browser. So if you've got Internet Explorer, for instance, you can go to Tools and then Internet Options, which is at the bottom of the list. Then you can select the Content tab. And then there's a little box that says Content Advisor. You can select Enable. You set a password there, and it says, okay, I want to filter all sites that have violence in them, that have sexual content, and you can actually do content filtering there. You also have the choice of blocking specific sites. Now the problem with the content filtering, like suppose you want to do a research project on breast cancer, that would be blocked because breast would be a blocked word. So content filtering, I mean, it's crude in a way, but for little kids, it's one way to do it. Now, here's the problem. They can download Foxfire.
Smart enough to do that.
Yeah, and all of that content filtering is only within Internet Explorer. So they could just contact and download another browser, and then they could get around it. See, and kids are smart enough to do that. That's the nice thing about configuring the firewall. Now, if you really want to get...
So you say that was a nice thing about kids, but it's not the nice thing about kids.
Yeah, now you can also go into the Windows operating system, and there's actually a file called hosts, and you can actually configure the Windows machine so it cannot reach a particular host. Now, you're doing the same thing as you do through your firewall, and it's Windows Systems 32 /drivers/etc/hosts. I'll have this on the printout of the show later on. You simply go to that, and the bottom line of it shows 127.0.0.1 localhost, and underneath that last line, you can simply add the blocked sites that you want, and you would put the 127.0.0.1 and then the name of the blocked site.com, and then you save it without an extension, and now that machine will not go to the blocked hosts at all. Now, that's very similar to what you're doing in the firewall, except if, if they don't have administrative rights to the machine, then they can't get to that. So gotcha. that would be another option. So these are all methods that you could use to block content. Now, if you want to be less restrictive, you could go like on Google. See, one of the problems that you have with kids, they're really not looking for anything, but they'll just do a Google search, and Google just shows up all kinds of stuff. So you can actually enable within Google filtering. And so you can have and it can filter out any material that Google deems objectionable. Mm-hmm. So that's actually sort of a low-level way to do it, and then they're just not going to stumble onto some porn site when they're doing some kind of innocent search, which could happen. Those are all methods that you could use to filter the content on your machine.
All right.
But I would recommend that you just talk to the kids and leave the machines out in the open, which is what we did. And I didn't do any filtering,
gotcha.
Actually, because if you filter it, it becomes so important to see it, they will see it, whatever it is.
They'll find a way.
Yeah.
I have a funny for you.
Okay.
Now, a few weeks ago, you remember we were talking about Quickie?
Yes.
And so we went to it live on the air, and now I get a Quickie in my email every day.
Excellent. What did you get?
Yesterday's was funny. Martha Stewart was released from prison on this day. Yesterday, in 2005, but jail wasn't the scariest thing she's ever faced. Stewart dated Anthony Hopkins in 2006. Didn't work out. Said Stewart, do you want somebody eating your brain while you're sitting in your beautiful dining room in Maine?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so thanks for getting me hooked on
Quickie, Doc. Well, okay, I try to do everything I can do to help out my co-host.
Hey, and we love your emails, so tell folks how they can send you an email.
Yeah, we love the emails. Just send us to techtalk@stratford.edu, and those emails will be forwarded to us, and we'll carry them on the air at the next show.
Excellent. You are listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to spotlight Leela Chirayath-Yana. Leela Yana is founder of Samasource, a business that connects people living in poverty to micro work or small computer-based tasks that can build and generate an income. This is an extremely clever idea, and I thought I should really feature this on Tech Talk.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Leela Yana was born 1983 in Buffalo, New York, to parents who had immigrated from India. She grew up in Los Angeles, and she heard many, many stories from her parents and their friends about the extreme poverty in India and where her parents came from. But she never really experienced poverty. She'd only heard about it as people talked. At age 16, she's quite a bright young lady. She won a full scholarship to college from a local tobacco company. She didn't like the idea.
Did she have to smoke the cigarettes to get
it? No, she didn't like the idea.
Yeah.
What she did, she went to the tobacco company, and she convinced them to let her use the money to go to Ghana for 6 months to teach poor kids. So she took her college scholarship money. I guess her parents could just send her to college.
Why not?
She went to Ghana, and she taught 6 months in Ghana. And because she wanted to learn more about poverty in the developing world.
Oh, brother.
World.
Okay.
Speaking
Hi. Speaking
of poverty.
Wait a minute.
Yes. Now we've got the... Okay,
hello.
Dave.
And you would be on that one. Talk.
You've only been doing this for a long time.
Well, it's like the
it's
show
okay,
game
it's
in
all
here.
Right. Where's the intro?
We have Mr. David
Bird
here.
The coming, intro, wait a minute. The intro is coming.
Coming in to talk about iPad 2.
Yeah, there you go, buddy.
Now we're talking. iPad 2, baby.
You already gotten on that already?
You walked all over the intro.
I'm sorry. Do it again.
No, forget it.
Okay.
Just talk about the iPad.
How about the iPad 2?
iPad 2, it's officially out.
Did Mrs. Wonderful get one of those already?
No, we don't have it. No, she's working on that.
What's your thoughts on the 2?
Well, the 2 looks pretty good. It has all the features that we thought it would
You're
have.
You're being very generous here this morning.
It's having all the features that it's 33% thinner.
That's a very
plus thing.
Very nice.
It's got a 1 gigahertz dual core A5 chip, which is actually designed...
Can you break that down in normal language for everybody else?
Okay,
everybody sounds excited until we hear what the
Okay, this is the deal. It's not an AMD chip. It's not an Intel chip.
Right.
Apple designed the chip themselves, so they pay no royalties for the chip.
They cut them out of the whole deal.
They designed the chip. They manufactured the chip. They own the chip.
That's the Apple way, isn't
And so
it?
That's Ooh. That way, that yeah, way, they way. Can, they don't have to pay those stinking royalties to these guys.
Nice. Now, they have a video, they have two cameras, so
cameras.
It's Skype friendly, if I understand.
Yeah, it's got two cameras. Now, the camera on the back can do 720p progressive video, recording at 30 frames per second. That's like an HD movie camera on the back.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a 5X digital zoom. Now, the one on the front just does VGA resolution at 30 frames. That's for your Skyping.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to Skype with this thing, though, you've got to get a headset with a little mic in it, because there's no mic built into it.
Oh,
that's
really?
A stinking deal, isn't it?
What's that all about?
There's no built-in mic. I mean, I don't know why they didn't put it in, but you know.
That's so because there'll be an iPad 3 with
That'll
that.
Be the iPad 3
right?
with the
that's
audio.
That's the way Apple rolls, man.
Now, it turns out this new CPU that they designed is twice as fast as their last CPU.
Yeah.
And they actually upgraded the graphics package, so it's 9 times faster.
Sweet.
Because that's, of course, what the Android was trying to do. Basically, they're doing everything that was in the Android tablet.
No, wait. Well, excuse me. Excuse me just for a second here. You're on such a roll, and then you have to do the snide Android comment.
No, but
well, what did you expect?
But listen, but I'm going to get into the most interesting thing about iPad is the whole ecosystem of sales. Why they can sell an $800 device for $500. Everybody else to compete on price is going to have to sell it at a loss. And I'm going to explain.
That's because they're doing their own chip.
That's only part of it.
Okay.
That is part of it.
All right.
That's the same screen, 1024 by 768 resolution.
Right.
Same screen they had before. Battery life is the same. It's got the same power requirements. It's got an HDMI output.
What are you doing?
It's my BlackBerry.
Don't touch his stuff.
It's my BlackBerry.
That's his.
That's stuff, not junk. Okay.
It's my BlackBerry. It's got an HDMI output, so you can hook it to a high-resolution TV and watch it.
Really?
And see what it is. You plug an HDMI, what they call it, a dongle. You plug a dongle.
I'm not going there.
I knew that would get him stuck.
You plug a dongle into the USB port, Dave.
Okay.
Okay. Listen, this is
where
Apple.
The audience makes up their own one line.
Dave wants to know where he can get his.
Yeah.
It's got a nice cover on. It's got this little magnetic cover so that it sort of clips on the top.
Yeah.
And when you remove the magnetic cover, it automatically turns on. When you put the cover back on, it turns off.
Now, here's the other question. We have competitors now, Samsung, Motorola. Mm-hmm. Have you checked any of their pads out or whatever they're calling them?
I think the first one to come out is the Motorola Zoom,
right.
Which because you want to get the latest Android operating system, the 3.0, which is designed for the tablet.
You're Android people, aren't you?
The Samsung is like 2.2 operating. The only one that's 3.0 is really the that's out now is the Motorola, and that looks pretty good.
Yeah, but the beef on the Android is they don't have any apps. Apple has all the apps. They got 1,000 apps. Well, they got what, 5? Well, but Android's got 5. You're not talking now.
Maybe what's the doc doesn't need apps.
Okay, maybe he does, and you'll make your own, right?
I write my own apps.
He writes his own apps.
He's got an answer for everything, don't you, Doc?
Okay,
that was good. Okay, you got
Plus, it's an open operating system, so I know how to hook it in, and I don't have to get permission from anybody to load the app.
That's right.
So that's
the
a
man
plus.
Of free phone calls.
Now here's the thing.
An iPad.
The price is the same. It's $500 for the baby one, 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi only.
It's eight something.
And it's $829 if you want to get the Wi-Fi with 3G and 64 gigs of storage.
The monster package.
$800.
Yeesh.
Monster.
Now here's the deal. How can Apple sell this thing at such a low price? Because
Doc, how can they sell it at such a low price?
Well, what
are the other ones selling theirs for?
Well, the initial ones were coming out of like the watered down ones, like $700.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Now here's how Apple's actually probably selling the hardware at a small loss or just break even because they make money on other stuff.
Well, they're going to give you the gun and sell you the bullets.
Okay, now this is the thing. First of all, Apple's got their own. They've got 300.
Like they did,
they've got 300 retail stores and they've got an online Apple store. So the large bulk of their iPads are sold directly to the customers without a markup.
Yeah.
See, that's an important thing.
Now,
what they did just to get more Apples out there, they did sign some licensing deals with like Best Buy and all, where they sell it through some of these things. But most of the stuff is direct sale. They also don't have to pay licensing for like the chip, I said, the A4 chip.
Yeah.
They own their own operating system, so they don't have to pay any licensing for the operating system. So that saves them money. And the final thing is, they make money on the digital storefronts, the App Store, iBooks, and iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
So selling the iPad to the consumer actually isn't the final product. It's just basically another entry into the iPad, iPod ecosystem.
Wow.
And so actually he's put together, in total, a very good package.
Very
and
nicely
see
done.
The
Did you
the,
hear him say
the,
that?
The
Good
Android
package.
The Android
That's not worse.
The Android does not have this ecosystem around it. So they have to make money on the hardware itself,
Absolutely.
Which is why they have to charge more for it.
All right.
Doc, the point was the Doc said
so
something
there is
kind
like the quick
Apple.
Summary of the iPad, right. The pluses, and they're mostly pluses.
I want to hear you say the following, Doc.
Okay.
Go out and get one now.
I can't say that. I can't say that, Dave.
Right, I know Doc, somebody.
Doc, I have to go back up to the mothership here real quickly. And I came down here not to talk about the iPad, even though that was a beautiful dissertation.
Yeah.
I did take notes. I'm a guy who hasn't bought a stereo receiver in 22 years, and mine died.
Yeah. Mm.
And I have not been into a stereo store. This shows you how old.
A lot of them don't exist anymore. You know, Meyer Emco's gone, right?
Yeah. What do you do for a receiver now?
That's a tough
one. Smaller is better now. It used to be that big Marantz or that big giant Pioneer. That's all gone.
A lot of these things are part of your TV surround sound thing these days.
Yeah, do you do the theater setup deal? I mean, that's what you got to do now.
See, I mean, the thing
this
is
sounds
now,
like something
every,
to talk about next week.
Yeah, everything has gone into MP, sort of digital format with NFLEX delivery, internet delivery. So everything's now hooked to the internet.
So
it's all different.
Just hook up speakers to your CPU.
It's well, actually, now with the sort of the newer systems, you just plug your TV directly into the internet,
So the days of sitting in your office playing jams or just jamming with somebody.
I think what David's getting at here is he wants to go home and listen to his Glenn Miller LPs on.
Hey, that's a throwdown. That's a throwdown.
Okay, in other words, he wants to plug in the old turntable into something.
Yeah, I want a turntable. I want to get a turntable. Now they have something where you take a turntable, play your albums, and make MP3s out of them.
Yeah, you can do that. I used to have my turntable, and I could adjust the little strobe light, so I'd get exactly the right turn rate, you know. I have really high-end stuff that...
Have I been sleeping for 20 years
actually,
and just woke
that
up?
That I actually threw it away. I actually threw all mine away. I couldn't even resell it.
Well, I'm redoing my office. I'm painting, and I took my receiver. I just threw it away.
Wow.
It's
okay, not very eco-friendly
Dave, I'll do a little research.
Would you?
And give you some answer
next
on that
week?
Next week. Yeah.
Excellent.
Okay.
Cool.
All right.
Did you bring your sister in, Jim?
I did. This is my sister, Kathy.
Hey, Kathy. How are you?
David Burke, Kathy Hergenreich.
I got a sister named Kathy, too, who's visiting. Crazy, huh?
Do we look
alike or something?
No. Can I leave now?
Yeah, you can leave now. Okay. Well,
bye,
thank
David.
You very
thank
much, David.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Byrd.
Thank you very much. Okay, there he goes. There's
thanks,
the man.
David. Where were we?
Why don't we take a break and then we'll come back. We'll come back and finish Leela.
I think that's a great idea. You're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We have no idea where we are or what we're doing, but we're going to do whatever it is that we do in a minute.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor, 5 of the 30 occupations projected to grow the fastest by 2016 are IT-related, led by network and data communications analysts, software engineers, and systems analysts. 70% of business technology professionals surveyed by Information Week say there is a shortage of IT talent in the U.S. today. However, if you have previous military or management experience, there are tremendous opportunities for you in the IT field if you retrain. Stratford University's bachelor's degree in information technology prepares you to analyze, design, implement, administer, and secure computer networks and information systems. Master's degrees are also offered in information systems and software engineering. Day and evening classes are offered so you can continue in your current field. Call Stratford University at 800-444-0804 or visit online at stratford.edu. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, Tyson's Corner in Woodbridge.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And, of course, we are in the middle of...
Profiles in
IT. Very good, very good. And we were discussing Leela Chirayathjana. Mm-hmm. Leela Jana was, of course, founder of Samasource, the business that does micro work for people, poor people in developing countries. And I was just getting to the point of where she got started with this when David Byrd walked in to talk about the iPad 2.
Mm-hmm.
She won a scholarship at age 16 instead from a local tobacco company. Instead of taking the scholarship, she went to Ghana for 6 months to teach the impoverished. She actually taught 60 rural high school students in Ghana who shared three textbooks. She wondered how a company so rich in human capital could be so poor, because these kids really had a real desire to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So when she went back to the U.S., this experience changed her attitude about global economics. She went on and graduated from Harvard in 2004 with a degree in African culture. She led the Harvard International Development Group, which was really looking at how you can do economic development in the impoverished countries. She published a paper on the Rwandan genocide. She was sort of looking at all of the global atrocities that were going on in the world. She started a company, a small nonprofit, with a couple of professors from Harvard, Thomas Pogay and Adrian Hollis, Incentives for Global Health. This was a plan to help incentivize for the development of drugs for neglected diseases. That's one of the problems. There are many diseases in the world where there's no incentive to develop the drug because the people who have those diseases don't have any money to pay for the drug. So she wanted to sort of incentivize that development. She did that briefly. Then she had to earn some money. So she got a job at the World Bank doing research. And then she wanted even more money, so she started working for Katzenbach Partners as an outsourcing consultant. This is, of course, where the money comes from.
Right.
And when she got into outsourcing, she began to understand how outsourcing works, because they were outsourcing work to people all over the world. And I mean, there was one outsourcing job, for instance, and they outsourced it to a center in India. And when she went there and talked to the people at the center in India, some of these kids were living in some of the most impoverished areas of India, and they would commute into that work center there in India. And so she began to realize, she began to connect the dots. She said, you know, outsourcing is a very good way to get work in developing areas. Now, when she was in Ghana, she realized there were all of these young kids that they were quite smart. They had all of this motivation, but there was absolutely no work. There was just no work. So she said, if we could only get work to these kids, they could actually do something. So she got the idea of micro work. This is where you'd have projects that would be available over the internet that people could actually do from where they were with just a cell phone or a very low-powered computer if they had internet access.
Huh.
So in 2009, she founded a company called SAMA Source, S-A-M-A Source, SAMA Source. It's a nonprofit corporation. SAMA means equal in Sanskrit. SAMA means equal in Sanskrit. And she actually has a tattoo on her wrist of the Sanskrit word for Sama, meaning
equal. That way she knows where she works.
So what she was trying to do...
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
Some days it's...
So,
I know.
So she actually wanted to create this company so that no matter where you live, you had equal chance to get work. It's really quite interesting.
Idea.
So it's just the opposite of microfinance. It's micro work or microcredit as mm-hmm. opposed... It's micro work instead of microcredit. Now, she describes SamaSource as the marriage between Silicon Valley technology and poor people, and it creates a compelling value proposition for customers who send work for assignments to the firm. Now, she believes that by employing the world's poor this way, that we actually can solve some of the major problems. She believes that part of the major problem of instability in the world is really the lack of work in the developing countries. I mean, if you look at...
Well, yeah, look at Egypt, right?
Well, you look at where do the young kids for terrorism come from? They're young kids who have no hope for work.
Right.
So if you could get employment and employment opportunities to these folks in these developing countries, you could actually shift sort of global events, global trends quite dramatically. So mm-hmm. I think this is really significant. This is why I wanted to sort of feature it. Now, the reason that this is actually working is that there are a couple of trends that are happening. First of all, there's growing access to technology and the internet. Like, for instance, they've just been rolling out fiber in Africa. And in Africa, the cost of internet access has dropped to 10% of what it was only a few years ago.
Hmm.
Now, there's also a rise in global literacy. Because what she discovered is in these developing countries, the kids would go to college. I mean, the kids would get educated. The parents would make the kids get educated. But then they would complete their schooling and there'd be no work. So we actually have a rising literacy combined with increase in access to internet. So this is actually a very good measure, a very good program. Now, the problem is she had trouble getting money for her company. It's a 501c3. She had trouble getting money. After she started it, she stayed with friends for about 6 months, sleeping a couch here, a couch there, just trying to get by. Mm. Then finally, she applied to Facebook to be funded as one of the Facebook Fund incubator programs, and her project was selected as one of two that year.
Wow.
That was a couple of years ago. She was selected as a Facebook Fund incubator program. Now, Facebook actually didn't give her any money, but they gave her access to their technology and their technologist. And they helped her to develop the platform for delivering this. And they also connected her up with around $80,000 in angel financing. Then she started moving forward. Shortly after that, she received grants from the Rockefeller and Templeton Foundations. Now, she now has about 18 companies that are providing work to around 600 micro workers distributed in various parts of the world. See, like, for instance, there was one woman in Pakistan who could not work outside of the home. She had to stay in the home. She actually had a master's degree in English. So they gave her micro work translating. There was some other micro work. Remember when we had the earthquake in Haiti, or
right,
the flood in Haiti? They had to translate some of the emergency things into Creole. And so they did. And so they actually sent this as microtext, and they were doing translations into Creole, and they get paid small amounts of money for it. There's another company that's in the solar panel business, and what they did is they took aerial photos of residential areas, and then the micro workers had to identify which houses had roofs that were pointing in the right direction for the use of solar panels.
Interesting.
And then they used that to create a mailing list for marketing. Which was really a good idea. So once you start thinking about it, there's all kinds of different types of projects.
Sure.
that you could actually do with a smartphone or with a computer. There's image tagging. There's all kinds of, when you start thinking about, all kinds of different applications for it. Now, she was the recipient of the Rainier Arnold Fellowship and also the TED India Fellowship. She serves on the San Francisco Board of Social Enterprise Institute. The Samasource website is samasource.com, SAMASOURCE.com. If you got a company, you can go there. You could get some outsourcing that would actually do social good. I think this is a great project. Her personal website's interesting to look at, leilajanah.com, leilajanah.com. She has a blog that's interesting on Social Edge, socialedge.org/blogs/samasourcing. All of these are going to be listed on the show
website
outline if you go to techtalkonline.com. She's got a Twitter account, twitter.com/Leila_C. This is an interesting person who's making a difference with technology, Leila Chirayath-Janah.
Very interesting.
And there you go. Let's take a break.
I hope you were paying attention.
Yes.
I know you were, because you were telling us.
I was trying to pay attention.
The listening audience was paying attention. Because they have a very good chance of winning, prize or something here.
They
in a couple
could.
Minutes like we usually do.
Yes.
The number to call so you can write this down and get ready, 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. You're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, 1035 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Mm.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for America's favorite new game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's the host and star of our show. It's not Bob Barker. It's not Rosie O'Donnell. No, it's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
You thought this was a radio show.
It is.
No.
Look,
it's a classroom of the airwaves.
Different radio stations.
It's a wireless classroom of the airwaves.
Why can't I get
that
straight?
Then of the internet. I know, after all this time.
I know.
And, of course, if there's class, what is it going to be, a test? Now, the nice thing is, if you get the correct answer to this test, this pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the award-winning Escoffier Dining Room, the Stratford University campus, or you may be able to go down to the dining room down on the Woodbridge campus.
Depending on where you live.
Yes, depending on where you live. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about the woman, Lila Jenna, who started the company Samasource. Where did the name Samasource come from?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you get the correct answer to that.
Your ticket to lunch for two.
Yes, indeed. Now, you can, of course, reach us on Skype by going to Tech Talk Radio 1, and you can come over the internet. It'll be forwarded right to the to the studio. If you want to do a more traditional way, Jim has that
method.
Why,
that would be the POTS line, the Plano telephone system.
Yes.
The number to call, all 10 digits in order, please, 877-936-9333. 877-936-9333. One more time. Dial carefully, 877-936-9333.
Now, let's have the tech moment in history. The first webcam.
Uh-huh.
Back in the early days, there was the Trojan Room coffee pot, and that was the inspiration for the world's first webcam. It was located in the Trojan Room within the old computer laboratory at the University of Cambridge. Now, this webcam was created to help the people working in other parts of the building to avoid the pointless trip to the coffee room by providing a live picture of the state of the coffee pot. They don't want to walk down to an empty coffee pot, or they want to know when they have to refill it.
Right.
You know, these are techie guys.
Yep.
Now, the camera was installed on a local area network in 1991 using a video capture card on an Acorn Archimedes computer. Now, they employed an X-Window Systems protocol. That meant it was using a Unix operating system. And then Quentin Stafford Frazier wrote the client software, and Paul Jardetsky wrote the server software. Now, in 1993, we had a big breakthrough. You might remember it, Jim, the browser.
Yeah, I do recall
Tim Berners-Lee, invented the browser.
We talked about them here.
Yeah, so they thought, you know, maybe we ought to get rid of this X-Window system and this client-server method and just use the browser. So they actually connected it to the Internet, and this connection to the Internet, and they basically broadcast live webcam over the Internet. That interface was written by Daniel Gordon and Marty Johnson, and that was launched in November of 1993. And it became visible to people. So everybody logged on the Internet to go look at this coffee pot in the Trojan Room at the Computer Laboratory, University of Cambridge. And it was on from 1993 until finally it was switched off at 9:54 in the morning on August 22nd, 2001. And it was, and this was actually the, it was, this was actually the fifth coffee pot seen online. So they had actually been through a number of coffee pots. Now the thing is, the coffee pot that was actually the last one shown on the webcam was auctioned off on eBay.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It was purchased by Spiegel Online for $5,400.
That's amazing.
So there you go. Pretty much everything you want to know about the first webcam in that tech moment of history.
I think it'd be great to watch the coffee pot melt down in order to have to be replaced by the next
one. That would be interesting.
So, $5,400.
That's right.
Quite a money-making venture.
I don't think I would have done that.
We have people on the line. Let us go to line number three. This is a name I haven't seen. Oh, no. That's bad.
Uh-oh.
David, if you, let's try this line. Hello. The phones are not working. This is bad. All right, David, if you're listening, you need to call us back. I think via the problem is we're not going to get him on the phone. We're not going to get him on the air. So let's do this.
Hello?
Yeah, hey, we hear something.
Who's that?
Yes.
Is this David?
Yes, it is.
David, how are you?
Whoa, wow. Technology has prevailed.
Some days it's like brain surgery around here. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I'm doing all right. I know you all are doing all right.
Yeah, we're doing good. Now,
have
you been
good.
Listening? You're listening in Washington, D.C., right?
Yes, sir.
Over the mighty 1500, I would suspect.
Yes, I am.
Okay, how long have you been listening to us?
Oh, for about maybe 4 or 5 years.
Excellent. We're glad to have you. So Doc asked the question.
Well, early in the show, we talked about Leela Jaina. She, of course, was the founder of Samasource. Where did the name Samasource come from?
India.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Okay, what?
What does Sama mean? How
what does Sama
that?
Mean?
It means equal.
Okay, there we go. Because actually, technically, it did come from India, from Sanskrit, but it was, he got it all.
Okay,
so,
that's right.
Wanted you to be a winner.
David, thank you for listening.
Congratulations.
Hang on, Via will talk to you, get your particular information, and we'll get the tickets for lunch out to you in just a moment. Thanks again for calling, and thanks for listening to Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM. HD2. I have to make that call.
Yes, indeed.
And 103.5 FM. If they listen to just 107.7,
yes,
they hear something completely different.
Yes.
And 103.5 FM HD2.
That's
so there
right.
you go. Of course, but we're a classroom on the air, not a radio.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so now that we got all this straight, we'll be back in a minute with more on Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
My career was going nowhere.
College just wasn't working for me.
I was lost. Then I discovered Stratford University.
Stratford.
Stratford University.
Stratford helped me take the skills I already had and turn them into a career.
I'm more of a hands-on learner, and I just couldn't make it in those large classes.
I finally knew I had to do something different.
With campuses in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge, Stratford helps you earn your accredited degree in business administration, culinary arts, allied health, hotel and restaurant management, information technology, and hospitality management through day, evening, weekend, and online courses. And with 10-week sessions and rolling enrollments, you can jumpstart your new career when you're ready.
Now I'm on my way to a real career.
I love my classes and professors. Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford was exactly what I needed.
Stratford University. Just start it and we'll help you finish. For information, call 1-800-444-0804 or check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. This morning I went to the Google Transparency Report. So you go to google.com/transparency and you can look at traffic worldwide by country.
Mm-hmm.
So in the drop-down menu, I selected Libya. And I looked at the traffic at Libya, and it turned out that at 12:30 p.m. on March 3rd, the traffic dropped to nothing.
Of course.
This is the traffic in and out of Libya, dropped to nothing, and it's still at zero traffic this morning, at least when I checked it this morning around 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And so it appears as though Libya has blocked the internet. Now, unlike the last time when Libya went offline, that was a few weeks ago, they were down for a couple of days or so. Somebody came up with, and how they blocked it the last time, they just made all the ISPs shut down their servers. They just actually shut it down completely. But this time, they did it in a more technologically advanced way. But they took the country offline by actually tinkering around with the routing tables. So actually, the routes are still up. The ISPs are still working, but the traffic is black holed. It's just sent to nowhere. So if you try to ping a router within Libya, it doesn't respond. You can't get to it. And people that are trying to get outside of Libya, they can't get out because the packets simply aren't allowed to traverse the network properly because they're working with the routing table. So they didn't really bother the ISPs. They just controlled the way the traffic is routed. A little bit more sophisticated. Of course, the shutdown came ahead of the planned protests in Tripoli calling for the ousting of Libyan leader Gaddafi. So sort of the same thing they did in Egypt. And actually, we know how that worked.
Yeah.
It didn't
work out too good for Mubarak.
No, and now what's going to happen is that both Facebook and Twitter support people getting internet access. So there will be, I'm certain there are already a series of dial-up numbers where people can dial out of the country and they can get internet access through dial-ups. More than likely, there are VPNs that are set up at corporations and people can get out through VPNs. So it's actually impossible to shut them off completely. And, you know, they can also get satellite connectivity to the internet. So, and they can't really block that. So I don't think they're really going to block off the internet completely, but they're certainly doing their best to do it. Let's talk a little about the Department of Commerce, how they're trying to manage IANA, the Internet Assigned Number Authority. Now, it turns out that let me just have a kind of a sidebar on the internet. I got to explain the internet a little bit.
Okay.
The internet was developed by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency back in the early 70s, and the protocols developed in the summer of 1973 under as an internet contract, and they basically were trying to develop a network that could operate even if there was this time was the Cold War, if there'd be a nuclear explosion. So they wanted a network that would self route traffic. So if one of the nodes would go out because of a nuclear bomb,
it'd
just route the traffic in another direction. So they ended up setting up a very robust network where they would break it up into packets and route it everywhere, and the routing tables would dynamically reorient if there was an outage. This became an extremely effective way to communicate and to connect computers. And so later on, they actually privatized the internet because businesses wanted it. And initially, you could only get on if you're a government agency, a government contractor. You were on the old ARPANET, or if you're a military contract, you could be on MILNET. I used to be on the old ARPANET a long time ago, but then they wanted to set up an internet where just anybody could get on it. So they privatized it, and they set up a nonprofit corporation, the Internet Society. And they have a number of organizations that would manage the internet, like the Internet Engineering Task Force. They had which actually establishes the protocols for the internet. They have the Internet Assigned Numbering Authority, IANA.org. This is really the organization that assigns IP addresses around the world. They also assign and authorize the names for what they call top-level domains like .com or .net. And so all of the sort of the initial management of the internet is sort of operated under a contract with the Department of Commerce and sort of the Internet Society and IANA. And it's always run through actually NTIA, which is the National Telecommunications Information Administration, which is part of Commerce. Okay, that's kind of the backdrop of it.
Okay.
And then the internet became extremely international, and so now we have other countries involved in it. It's not just United States centric, even though we set it up. So now there's this issue: how do you govern the internet? It's really not officially a government operation. Although they do have authority vested in, say, IANA or the Internet Society by virtue of various contracts. So what they're trying to do is figure out how can we manage it and not get in the way of the internet, and how are we going to set up governance? And so they actually issued something. This is a very, it's really kind of an important thing. They issued a request for comment on in the then, and it just came out this last week. And this and what they are asking, they were asking for input from U.S. citizens on how best IANA function should be handled. You know, how should they govern IANA? How should IANA address the needs of the users? And the users, of course, are multiple countries as well as other things. What processes within IANA, an Internet Engineering Task Force, an Internet Society, can be used to make everything more transparent? How should they handle security considerations? Now, the Internet Society is crafting a response to this for this request for information. And it's just kind of interesting to watch. If you want to see what the Internet Society is saying about it, go to isoc.org. If you actually want to look at the request for information on IANA, you can go to ntia.doc.gov. That would be the National Telecommunications Information Administration. This allows you actually to look at sort of the inner workings of the Internet, and you really don't get to see this so often. It's an interesting thing. I sort of got keyed in on it because I'm on the mailing list of the Internet Society, and they were actually querying all of the members of the Internet Society to see what their ideas were. It's kind of an interesting, interesting thing.
I'm thinking we should stay here and not take our last break because we're running out of time.
Oh, okay.
That's my semi-professional opinion.
I think, well, then, as opposed to your professional opinion.
Well, you know, some days I can only do so much.
Well, I'm going to be going off to Sri Lanka next week. I'll be there in Sri Lanka doing working with one of our partner schools there in Colombo, and I'll be then visiting shortly thereafter we have a campus in New Delhi. This is why I was kind of interested in this story about India. And one of the issues when we teach in India, and this is something, this sort of gets at how we teach at Stratford University. The one thing in India, the kids that come to us, and we've got about 500 students are going to school in New Delhi. When they come to Stratford, they kind of expect it to be taught like they've always been taught in school. You lecture, they memorize, and you give a test. And we've actually found that what the employers want are people that can actually solve problems. So we teach by asking questions, and then the students figure out the answers, and the teacher simply guides them, a lot like Socrates did. And so we teach them how to think in a very systematic way about any problem. And it's within the lingo of what we call critical thinking, where you look at the 8 elements of critical thinking, the standards of critical thinking. And we started implementing that. I go over to India quite often to train faculty. And it turns out that that's also what the U.S. employers want. So I thought our curriculum would influence India. We ended up having India influencing our U.S. curriculum because now what we've done, we've brought and embedded critical thinking in all the courses there at Stratford University, whether they be in culinary arts, nursing, a lot of critical thinking, as well as IT. So it's kind of an interesting evolution of events. Now, what we want you to do is check out what's going on at Stratford University because, you know, they're the ones that, you know, pay the big bill on Tech Talk. So go to stratford.edu. Now, what I want you to do, though, is go to techtalkonline.com, and we love your emails.
Yes, we do.
So you send us an email at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll cover that on the air. You can also, download the podcast. Every show is on the web that we've done since the year 2000. You go to Tech Talk Online, and you can download the podcast, or you can go to Apple iTunes and simply search for Tech Talk Radio and get the podcast there, and you can actually put it on your iPod. In any case, I think the time's about up, and we'll see you next week.
Exactly.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
Cloudy, 47 degrees outside our studios in Northwest D.C. It is 10 a.m.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're going to join me for one of the fastest based half hours of radio that you can possibly imagine. And with me today is my special guest and partner, John Frieden. Welcome, John.
Morning, Wayne.